Hey everybody, Jordan here, the PH is silent, and in this episode of the Saturday Morning D&D Show, we talk about the Stream of Many Eyes, people getting mysterious keys from Wizards of the Coast, and my trip to Thailand. Hello everybody, welcome to the Saturday Morning D&D Show. My name is Jordan with a silent PH in the middle, and I am joined always by my wonderful co-host Sir Lucian over at Sir Lucian Gaming. And I am exhausted because I am back from Thailand and I'm a little jet lagged. And even though I slept last night, I took a melatonin to help me sleep. I'm just like drowning in or drinking tons of coffee and trying to just kind of stay focused. So this will be an interesting one, an interesting show, I think. Sir Lucian probably wishes that he had a different co-host.
We'll let chat give you some energy. Everybody in chat, make sure you send your energy to Jordan this morning. Get him woke up.
Yeah, I need to wake up. And also, I really did unplug for the most part. I checked Twitter every once in a while. I saw that there was something going on. But like as far as D&D news, I don't know what's been happening in the last 2 weeks. So do you want to fill me in? What's going on? We got a Stream of Many Eyes, I hear. And that's about all I know.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a little bit of what they've been announcing and hinting at over the last week. They've been talking about finally who's going to be in it, or at least some of the DMs that are going to be running it. It sounds like they've rented or have access to a pretty good size studio over in California to put this thing on.
Sweet.
And not only are they going to stream all of the games, but they're also going to have like live seating. So there's going to be some live audience because you can buy tickets to it.
I think I remember that. Yeah, you could buy tickets because I saw Holly Conrad was tweeting that you could watch like dice camera action live and they were selling tickets and stuff, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And so the hashtag has been hashtag S-O-M-E D&D, or when I look at it, I think some D&D, but it is the Stream of Many Eyes D&D. And it's the announcement basically of the new storyline. So the new adventure book that's going to come out, because we just had, or we're about to have Mordekainen's tome, which I think is next week.
Yeah, it comes out. Well, when it drops. I'm lame and I get mine on Amazon because it's cheaper. So it comes out at the end of the month for like everybody else, but it's in game stores 2 weeks before. So it should be next week, I think.
I think it's next week. Yeah. So I'll get to go down and pick mine up. And then I'm sure we'll talk about it on one of our shows. And like Lex mentioned, Satine is now an official Wizards of the Coast wizard, just like Kate Welch.
And I wanted that job.
They're just hiring all kinds of great people. And, the atmosphere at that place sounds great. It sounds like a dream job for anybody. Never let your dreams, you know, I'm sure, I think Kate has said it and Satine has said it, you know, they've never thought they would ever be able to work for, you know, something they love so much. And look at it, they're there, you know, so keep that hope alive. You never know. So the new storyline, some of the videos have still been about Mordekainen push. So we've still been hearing, they've been releasing little snippets about, things they were talking about in the books and some of the new races, some of the new creatures. They were showing a pager here, there on some of the shows. And they're still doing the subclass building with Mike Merles. And even this week, Jeremy Crawford talked about building subclasses and their philosophy behind it, how they do it. And I noticed this week, Jeremy was a little bit more active on Twitter than he was last week, on starting to answer some of the D&D questions again, or like, you know, the things that pop up. Like there's been a big discussion because I think he's changed his stance a little bit on bonus action, which was interesting, and how bonus actions work. So if you keep it up on Jeremy's Twitter, you'll see that there's been a lot of discussion about bonus action stuff, which is interesting. So I think that's about
like
the D&D
news. Now I'm confused. What was his stance on bonus actions and how did it change?
I would have to read
it. Have to go read it again.
But it has to do with when something happens as an ability that says it's triggered when a bonus action happens.
Gotcha.
And I think the general rule was the thing happens before, but like if I have an ability that triggers when you use a bonus action, then my ability triggers the moment you say you're going to use your bonus action. Mm-hmm. So it triggers, and in his view, that was the general rule, and then your bonus action would go on. But I think what he's changed, he says it makes more sense now as he's thought about it more, and it seems to be an exception that the bonus action needs to happen and complete before whatever ability triggers off that happens. So it doesn't interrupt the bonus action. it's a result of the bonus action being taken, I think, is where he's gone with it. So, and I may be misrepresenting. I think that's the way that I understood it as I read those tweets, but you might go back and take a look. It was an interesting thing to look at because it was a lot of bonus action talk this week, I noticed.
So Stream of Many Eyes is going to be in June?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And then when Stream of Annihilation happened, how long before we actually, like, how, because they announced Tomb of Annihilation there. How long was it until we got Tomb of Annihilation? I'm trying to remember. Was it like 3 months, 4 months?
It felt like that was the gap. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think the books are somewhere around 3 to 4 months apart for the books they released, because like we had Xanathar's 3 or 4 months ago, and now we're getting Mordekainen's, and then we'll have, you know, 3 or 4 months from now, I believe we will get
the next adventure,
the next one. Yeah,
it feels like Spelljammer. Like they have a couple of like Spelljammer races, and then the Githyanki and the Githzerai, and then specifically like Stream of Many Eyes makes you think of Beholders.
Yeah.
And Beholders are a very Spelljammer-y type monster as well. That I'm like, what are they doing? Are they taking this huge leap? And if you watch some of their other videos, there was like a lore you should know that I was watching. I think I only got about halfway through it, but they were talking about, Spelljammer, the setting that everybody loves that we apparently aren't giving enough attention to and things like that. But the fact that they're dropping these little hints here and there, I'm like, are you, I don't know. It seems that they won't, because it's not like that's taking, that's going way out of the way
of
like traditional D&D.
Yeah.
Like it's a big leap, but I still think like the majority of people would really love some kind of cool, I don't know, maybe if they had rules in this new adventure that you could use for either space or seafaring vessels, things like that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, Lex in chat was kind of in the direction that I was going. He was talking about his friend's theory, and you can say this is my theory, is I think they're about to do a deep dive on Waterdeep once again, because that's been, Waterdeep City itself has been covered quite a bit. It's one of the most mapped cities I can think of in all the different editions that you can find. You can find mega maps out there that are like, they must be 20 feet tall.
Yeah.
And the papers are laid out on the ground of this tremendous size city that they've built and that people have mapped out and listed out. And I'm wondering if it's now 2018 D&D 5th editions saying, here's Waterdeep, you know, 5th edition version, and boom, you know, just drop it on us. This is what I was wondering. Because to me, I mean, if you bring out a Xanathar's Guide book, which is the guy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. The Xanathar, he's underneath Waterdeep, right?
I think so. Yeah. That's the whole thing. He's way deep and down. And that's a big, so that might get us back into the Underdark again. That might get us back underground again. We haven't really had that in fifth edition. Cause what we've had a lot of cult.
What's the one with the Underdark?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had that one.
No, like, did they have that adventure? Fifth edition?
Yeah. For fifth edition. Out of the Abyss.
Out of the Abyss.
Was completely
okay,
in the Underdark. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I missed then. Yeah. Because I was thinking they Out of the Abyss, then they had Cult of the Dragon Queen, right?
Horde of the Dragon Queen. Yeah.
Horde of the Dragon Queen.
We run a professional D&D show, ladies and gentlemen. We eat, breathe, and live this stuff. So that's why we cannot remember the names of these adventures.
We homebrew too much is our problem.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, Storm King's Thunder, Tomb of Annihilation. So it's brought us in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting where it takes us next.
But right. We haven't had like a full city adventure. Like if they did an adventure that was just in Waterdeep, where you never had to leave Waterdeep, that would be different and would be really, really cool. Because it's no longer this like, let's explore, let's get to this point. You're like in a city, exploring
what
a city.
That
but
look like?
Would that look like? That would be really cool, actually, if that's, yeah. Now I got to make, I think I made a Waterdeep video. Now I probably got to make another one. So
get ready for it. Yeah, try to jump on it.
For Stream of Annihilation, they dropped all these hints about Chult, and I made this video about Chult, and I released it like immediately when they said, because I was watching the stream, immediately when they were like, here's our new adventure, and it's going to be in Chult, I hit publish on my YouTube channel, and people were like, were you in on this? Because they literally just announced it and you're posting this video. And I was like, no, but they dropped enough hints. So I hope they drop another bunch of hints that I can get a video out, because it'd be interesting.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Get a jump on it now. Because even if they're just rumor mongering, why not have a video out there for the rumor mongers,
that's true.
Even if they're wrong. So yeah, so I think it's exciting. I'm always excited for a new adventure path. It's obvious that when you get adventure paths, you usually get good adventure that you can add to your campaign, or you can usually start your group on this new whatever it is. Most of the time they have a tie-in to how you can start from first level, mm-hmm. even if it is a higher level one, or how to work it in if you're not first level. They usually give us plenty of maps and some new creatures and some new mechanics to use. Some of them will have new classes. Some of them won't. We're probably about subclassed out. I don't know if we'll see any new classes. Maybe we'll see some new races. But with Mordekainens, we're going to see a bunch of new races too.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see. Maybe it's just a straight adventure. Or maybe we're completely wrong and they're finally going to go Planescape, or they're finally going to go Dark Sun, or they're going to go Spelljammer, or they're going to go they're going to go big time. Because they've done Forgotten Realms pretty well,
yeah,
and covered it. It might be time for them to grab on to some of their other worlds out there and say, with Mordekainens saying Greyhawk exists or Spelljammer exists, mm-hmm. or all this other Dark Sun exists and, you know, the planes exist, maybe it's time to send us out to those extraordinary places too. So who knows?
Oh man, it makes me excited. I just get so excited about new
adventures.
You
know who knows? Satine knows, because there was a really funny tweet out there about when they showed her the schedule of the upcoming releases, how she reacted when she saw all the stuff that was coming, because now she's in the know. And it was just like, oh, imagine being able to see that schedule. Oh,
yeah,
that'd be so good.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Hey, Cyberwolf, welcome. Late to the party, but it's still an awesome party because you're here.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so what did you do in games this week? I haven't played games in like 3 weeks.
Man, that just doesn't sound like a vacation to me, Jordan.
I know,
like,
it's
if
true.
If I'm going to go on vacation, I need games.
And like, tomorrow's Mother's Day, so my group canceled. Yeah. And I'm really trying to figure out a way of playing D&D tomorrow. I'm just like, I'm like, maybe we need to like run something online. I need to just contact a bunch of people, because I'm still in vacation mode. Like, I don't go back to work till Monday. I want to like do some enjoyable vacation stuff, so.
Yeah, we could play some game, and I bet I could round some people up. I bet there's some people that would play. Cyberwolf plays a mean dragonborn.
Sweet.
So that's pretty good. All right, well, this week, so last Sunday, just after our last Saturday morning Dungeons & Dragons show, we had an interview with Jim Murphy, which was really awesome. He was somebody I got introduced to by watching Matt Colville's videos, and watched a really cool interview with Matt Colville and him, and always had it set that I wanted to get an interview with him if I could for our show. And we did, it worked out. And he's a really cool guy who's been in the hobby from the beginning. So it's a good kind of person to talk to if you want to know how it started. And what I like about him too, though, is he's not the type of person that's like the gatekeeper kind of person to say, he's not the guy that says, this is how we used to do it, and now it's just all wrong because they don't do it that way anymore.
Right.
He's excited with the way it is. He loved 4th edition. He likes 5th edition. He runs games all the time. He likes other games that were out there that are based on Dungeons & Dragons, or are from people mm-hmm. that built Dungeons & Dragons. So but it's really cool to go back and see how the game started, existed, why it made some of the decisions it made. It was just an interesting person. He's hosted conventions. He's hosted events at conventions. He's big into the living campaign stuff. He's going to be starting a living campaign of his setting. And he's going to be doing a lot of streaming with Matt Colville here pretty soon, who's got his studio. So we should be seeing some stuff out of their new studio here pretty soon too. So, and we're both big fans of Matt's. And it's great that he has great success at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was cool. If you missed that, you can check it out on the VOD. I'll probably send it over to Jordan if he wants to put it up on the channel. If he doesn't, I'll put it up on my YouTube channel, but we'll put it up somewhere where you guys can watch it on YouTube too.
We'll get it up there. So
yeah. So then Sunday we had the return of our standard ratio. PB had been having some computer difficulties, and we were trying to figure out how to get that up and going again, and we finally did. We talked about Mass, the new generation, which I've been big into lately, and I've been doing some videos on that, but we both talked about what we liked about it and how to play it and what to do if you want to play it, those kinds of things. And we talked about some really cool Kickstarters in that. So if you're looking for some cool new RPG Kickstarters that are a little bit different than the run-of-the-mill stuff you've seen, check that show out, because we point you in the direction of a couple of really good ones. Tuesday is our Tomb of Annihilation game. So we're playing Adventure League rules, Tomb of Annihilation. Nobody died, thankfully. There was a lot of chances for that to happen. It was a very interesting encounter in that. I was trying not to spoil it. So if other people are still playing Tomb of Annihilation, I'm not, you know, spoiling anything for you. But there is a really cool encounter that happens on a 300-foot tower of stone up in the air. And obviously, if you fall off, that's going to be the end of your character.
Yeah.
And so it made for some tense fighting. It made for some tense moving around. It had some mechanics about getting up and down. There's a lot of fear there of our characters just being, you know, swept off and being done. But it went well. We had a good plan. We stuck with it, and it was pretty good. One of the things that came up in the discussion with our DM was some people thought that when you do a reaction attack, so like my character wanted to leave the person he was fighting to go somewhere else to help, and that provides an attack of opportunity, that if you have an attack of opportunity, you get all your attacks. But the actual is not that. Yeah, because that would be much more dangerous. Yeah. And it's not necessarily even a specialized attack. It's just like one of your melee attacks that you have access to.
Like if you were a wizard, you don't get a cantrip or anything like that. Yeah.
Right. So it's a very specific reactionary attack that you get. And it's melee. It's not, you can fire your bow or something like that. It's definitely a melee attack. So then we had a good discussion about that, found it in the player's handbook, what it talked about. So that was pretty good. And one of the other things that came up that really cemented for me this week or in my GMing is that I like it when there's an NPC or NPCs that are with the group helping the group, because it just provides an outlet for when they get stuck. As far as in most cases, you might think, well, if they need a hint, you know, because it's just something's just not, they can't figure out what's going on. But it's not necessarily that. It wasn't that was what I was wanting. It's more the idea of the group sometimes get paralyzed because they have too many options. So all of a sudden they have five different ways they can approach this tower.
Yeah.
All five of them are probably okay and good, but they get stuck in trying to figure out, well, which one are we going to do? And it turns into a cycle. And with the NPCs there, there's a way for the GM to kind of nudge and say, well, we need to pick one, or here's some more information. So now maybe it narrows it down to three. So now you guys can make a better choice of what you want to do. But it just provides the GM a way in to help with the conversation that you don't have necessarily if you don't have any NPCs in the group, if it's just the group and the GM waiting for them to do something. So I just feel like, and it provides opportunity to fill in silence, right? Because if the group isn't thinking about interacting or RPing, you can use your NPC to initiate something like sitting at a campfire, and the NPC can say, hey, you seem like you really tore into that goblin, like tore his throat out and everything. What was that all about? And you can then prompt something to get going, where you can't really do that as much if you don't have an NPC in the party.
Yeah.
To be there when that happens, when they're just kind of staring at each other.
So. And I love, I guess I have a lot of NPCs in my games, and not necessarily NPCs that run around with my party, but if they get invited by the party to run around with them, then they do. And it's not like a DM NPC, like I'm not leveling this guy up, and they usually stay out of the fight unless my players are just like, a little help, please. And I'm like, oh, okay. Or I'll give the sheet to my players, and I'm like, do you want to run this NPC? Since he's helping your group. Because I don't like the idea of a DM NPC where you're trying to like play and DM at the same time. It's just like, you should just be a dungeon master. Like, it's fun to be a dungeon master. But it is nice for that. Like, I like the interactions that you can have. And rather than my players asking me questions where they're just like, well, what does this mean? Or what is this piece of lore? They can direct it towards the NPC. And it's just, I don't know, like it adds a more layer of realism to the game, because they're interacting with a character rather than just trying to like get information out of you as the dungeon master, you know?
Yeah. And I think the danger is like what you pointed out, it's not necessarily the GM has an NPC in the group. It's the GM has a player in the group, right?
Right.
Or an actual PC.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where every, if you listen to a lot of the D&D advice, they always try to tell the GMs, as much as you want to be playing these cool games too, having a full-on character sheet of your totem bear barbarian,
right,
who's going to join the group because you want to play a totem bear barbarian really bad, doesn't necessarily work out as well as you think it might.
Yeah.
It might actually detract from the game or make it tougher. So lean away from that.
Yeah.
but NPCs are things that I think become sources of information, sources of inspiration, sources of storyline, sources of nudging you to do some role play character background stuff, and places to help things get unstuck without really just being the GM putting their heavy hand in there and saying, hey, the right side door blows open of a strong wind, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. So that came up in our Tomb Annihilation. I always try to look at the games I'm either playing in or GMing in, just the things that came up that were interesting to other GMs that they might keep in mind or see, or even things I'm still learning as I go. Like, I've never stopped learning or never stopped thinking about how I might have adjudicated something and then decide, you know what, maybe I'll do it differently this next time, or maybe I'll think about that.
No, I had a game where they were fighting on top of a plateau, and they were fighting harpies who were trying to pick them up and drop them off of this like 500-foot plateau, and that it's fun. Like, it, and that was really scary because it was just strength checks and acrobatics checks to see if they could get out of the harpy before they had enough time to fly them over and drop them off of a ledge. Because the harpies, once they picked you up, moved at half speed. So it was, it makes for some realism where they're just like, you know, I could die in an instant as opposed to this monster whittling down my hit points. It definitely put a layer of urgency there. So don't do it all the time, but it's a fun mechanic.
Yeah. We were also worried just trying to climb down. Like, I felt like I would have been a little bit nicer from my point of view, that once they had this big battle up on top of that and they had gone through all of it, that I would let them off on the getting down part. I would gloss over that, montage over that a little bit. But in our game, it was like, you need to make skill checks coming down, because at any point we could have made it survive this awesome battle at the top. And it was epic. Like, it was crazy that we could have died TPK at any moment. But then we're making these checks, and of course I miss a check on a ladder on the side of the mountain. And I'm just thinking in my head, well, crap, did we just have this heroic battle that we survived, and I'm going to die because I slip off a ladder, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh my God. But I was like, you know, you got to roll with the way your GM rolls, and that's cool. But we made it down, and everybody survived, and nobody fell too far that they couldn't take the damage that they took.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that was pretty good. Thursday night is my Borderlands game. So in that game is my West Marches game. If any of you are catching me on Twitter, which is @SirLuciangaming, all one word, Twitter, I posted out a picture of the map, the hex map I've done. So it was like day one hex map when the players arrived at the new lands that they were in. There's like a day six version of it after they've went out on an excursion and come back. There's a day 12. They went out on a different excursion and come back. So they're opening up more and more of the map. And now they're on like day 48 or something, and the map's definitely much wider, and so you can kind of see their progression through the hexes if you're interested in that. A lot of people liked what they saw in that, so it was cool. There were about a month, almost over a month and a half of player time or character time, in game time, that they've been in this land. They're about to go after probably the first real bad guy that I have presented in that area, the first faction that they've run into and had some trouble with. It's been really good. They are very focused group of five, which is nice. They're a good mix of veteran players, so they kind of are really go-getters and know what they want to do. They've had some good class stuff. And this next fight, I think, is going to be interesting from a GM perspective, because my plan is, and even though I'm sure one or two of them are in the chat, but they have already figured it out, that they're in Spider Mountain at this point, and I'm going to keep the pressure up. So short rests and long rests are probably going to be very hard to get, if they get them at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they get through this place without the rests that usually allow their characters to power back up to their full level, right?
Yeah.
And I think in some ways it's implied that the game is balanced that way, that you have multiple encounters before a long rest is taken, right? But that's not how any of my games have gone.
Yeah.
Right? I think there's been people polling other GMs and everything. And they're like, no, my players have one fight. They all do a long rest every single time and before they ever get to their next fight. Yeah. So it's always like they're fighting at full power, full strength, whereas I'm about to put my players to the test in this one. So I'm excited to see how this works out.
Yeah, Matt Colville did a poll, and it was overwhelmingly that you have one fight and then people would do a full rest, a long rest. And in order to challenge my players more lately, I've been doing the same thing. I've really been pushing for short rests. And so I'm like, okay, you guys have traveled for like an hour or so, but that traveling is hard, so it doesn't count as a short rest or whatever. And then they'll have like a couple of fights, a couple encounters. And they've come to me and they've said like, well, can we take a long rest? And I'm like, you can, but it's super dangerous like where you're at. And you're going to mess up like, or I'll say you just can't because it's 10 in the morning. Like you can't take a long rest right now because it's just 10 in the morning. Like you can't, you can take a short rest, but you risk monsters coming after you if you take a short rest. There was another Colville thing, I think, where he said he rolls 2d12 if you take a long rest, and on a 11 or a 12, you get an encounter. And that's been really good in my games too. And I've been doing that. So if they take a short rest, I'll roll a D12. On an 11, they have like a medium encounter. On a 12, they have a difficult encounter. And then they can rest after that, but it's another way of depleting resources and hit dice and things like that. So yeah.
Yeah. And that's what the next couple of sessions are going to be about. And I realize that by doing this style, we're going to have a couple of straight sessions that are going to be full combat, full moving from one battle to another inside this underground mountain. And we'll probably won't get as much RPing going, but it's going to be a lot of tactical fighting, a lot of, oh my God, there's more of them. They're coming out of the tunnels in the darkness. What's really good about this that's made it the best is that all my players are human.
Okay.
So they only have torches and globes. And it has been one of the best games I've run because of that, because everybody's not running around with 60 feet of dark vision or 120 feet of dark vision. It adds that essence of, holy crap, we can hear them just outside of the darkness. We hear their feet. We hear their chittering. We know they're there, but we cannot see them.
Do you rule carrying a torch? Like if I'm a two-handed weapon fighter, do I only get one weapon because I have to carry a torch in the other hand?
Yeah, what they have done is they have used light spells on their helmets.
Okay.
Or they've used light spells on their daggers, or they got out of one of the ruins, they've got a drift globe.
Okay.
And a drift globe is you can give it a command and it will follow that one person by about 5 feet, and it follows behind them at head level. And it's only about, it's a 20 feet of regular light and 20 feet of dim vision.
Okay.
Light. So it's about 40-ish feet circle. And we're using Roll 20. So we've got dynamic lighting on and everything.
Nice.
So it's not just me saying, oh, it's in the dark and you can't see it. It's like they move their character forward and they still can't see it in the dark, but they know there's something out there and they know it's there. And then they see it at the dim light as they see just the edge of a token. And they're like, holy crap, look how big that token is, and before it gets to them. And it's just, it really adds a lot of cool drama to it. And,
yeah, that sounds fun.
The dynamic lighting adds so much to that style of gameplay, so it's pretty fun.
One other thing, going back to short rest, long rest, that I've been doing to kind of challenge my players is I do skill challenges, and so we'll have skill challenges like, okay, you walk in the desert for like a couple hours, let's do a skill challenge. If they fail that challenge, I've been taking away hit dice. So I'll just say, you guys lose 3 hit dice. And it doesn't hurt them. Like, you know, they're just kind of fine. But when they actually do have to rest and they, like, you've depleted that resource. And that's been kind of a fun way of depleting resources on like travel montages and things like that. I really like that idea because I'm not hurting them, but in the long run, they just don't have as much oomph when they take a short rest, and it's been kind of fun. So
yeah, I made a huge point that before they went into Spider Mountain, they were taking a long rest at the edge before they were going to go in the tunnel that leads them in, and they had an encounter. Spiders dropped on them on the last watch of the morning. And so all of their players had their long rest, but then they had this fight. And I made sure that they went in, they had this next fight. And I said, everybody needs to keep absolute track on purpose for these next couple sessions of your hit dice that you're using and what spell slots you've got, because this is going to be a long out battle and I want it to be really authentic. So I came right out and told them, I'm doing this on purpose and I want you guys to be really honest on your spell slots and on your hit dice you're using in your long rest, because it's going to be a very interesting, I want it to be that type of battle where it feels like they're slowly running out of everything they have and it's dire and things are about to get crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I want that tension of, oh my God, we don't have our big spells. We don't have our hit dice. We've used all our hit dice at this point. There's a point where it could come up. They could take a short rest and they have no hit dice to use.
Yeah.
You know, so no, I want to have that happen.
Yeah. And if you follow the rules, I think if you take a long rest, you only get half your hit dice back. So yeah. If you start whittling them away with skill challenges or short rests and stuff, it can add up, you know, like if they're lost in the jungle, you know, the first couple days might be fine. And then the next couple days might be like, well, even if we take a long rest, I'll still only get like 3 hit dice back. You know, we're only level 6. So, yeah
and this is the campaign where we have the rule of every morning when you take your ration, we roll to see if the ration has spoiled in your pack. So they were out day one. No, it was day two. So the way I do it is on day one, you take a D20, you roll a D20. If you roll a 1, then your ration has been spoiled. So you have to roll another 1 to see if that one is fine. And you know, most of the time, nobody rolls a 1. But as you go to day 2, if you roll a 2 or a 1, it's spoiled. Mm-hmm. You go to day 3, 2 or 1 are spoiled. So we're on second day. Our main fighter, Great Sword Fighter, I say, okay, everybody, we just had our second day. You need to roll your ration. He rolls a 1, a 2, a 2, a 1, and finally like a 10. So he goes through 5 of his rations all at once. And it's like your pack is just has a bunch of spoiled rations in it. And that just ramped up tension automatically for him too. It was like, whoa, well, I almost just ran out of food here. We're only 2 days out. So
that's
a cool
awesome
little mechanic that they get into. So I think it's been pretty fun.
Well, sweet.
But the last thing, and then we're on our Saturday morning show. We had nothing to happen on Friday. We're going to have a Sunday show, Standard Array, where we're talking about Numenera and the way they've been marketing the new product that's about to come out. And I love Monty Cook Games. So even though that discussion may seem a little critical of the way they've been marketing this new product, I love their company. So it's not like I'm trying to diss them or be down on them, but it does seem like there's some confusion between what Numenera 2, Numenera Discovery, Numenera Destiny, what all this stuff is. And we're going to try to clear up a little of that confusion, I think, on
cool.
that show. So if you want to know about that stuff, you can sign in tomorrow night at about 8 or 9. And then, I don't know, maybe Jordan gets a D&D game going.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be some D&D
that would be fun. Actually, and
literally
after we finish this show, we should talk about it and see, because I'm like, I haven't played D&D in like 3 weeks and I miss it so much.
Yeah. I keep telling Agrippa the Green that I want to get her in one of our games too. So we'll have to see. I know some players that want to play. Okay. That is me and my role playing. Hey, Jordan, what'd you do in role playing over
yeah.
this last week?
Absolutely nothing. But I had a fantastic trip to Thailand. So I went on my honeymoon and it was really, really fun. Super exhausted. Like just, it's a 13-hour time change. So, and we were due pretty good until about like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And then I would just be like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. And you start doing the math and it's like 5 in the morning, you know, in the United States. And I was just like, oh, so that was fun. But like we saw elephants and we went and like fed and bathed and washed elephants and stuff. And I went snorkeling, saw a bunch of fish. We went boating to different islands. Like we did a whole bunch of stuff, ate like delicious, delicious Thai food. And my wife is super picky. So we went to a couple places where she could get like kind of more Western food. But I was fairly adventurous. We did go to one restaurant that had like straight up fish heads. And I was just like, ooh. I don't know if I'm ready to eat something that can look at me. So maybe I'll pass on that. But
yeah. Now, when you say Thai food, is it is Thai food and Thai American food, like the American types of Thai food you can get here, is that anything the same, or
no,
is that like everything
surprisingly
else
totally similar
different?
Yeah, surprisingly similar. Okay. So like there was like pad thai, like noodles and chicken and vegetables kind of mixed up. They had a lot of curries, so a lot of different like coconut curries and stuff. Nice. There's a great picture of me, like we went to an island and they totally had just like coconuts, and I thought it was like a fruit smoothie in a coconut, but no, they just like crack open a coconut and you just drink the coconut milk. And so there's a great picture of me like holding this coconut, like I'm on an island, like look at me. Typical tourist, like, oh, it was fun. We went kayaking in caves. They had like this river went, or yeah, the river that went into the ocean went through this cave, and so we were like kayaking in these old caves and stuff. If you are a patron of me, I put a video of a bunch of the videos that I took. I made like a little Google video and put it up there on the internet so you can watch that if you're a patron. But yeah, it was a really, really fun trip. Kind of super unplugged from a lot of it. Like I said, I checked Twitter a little bit, but I didn't really follow what was going on. I was going to ask you, I did see that people are getting these keys sent from Wizards of the Coast. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Yeah, it's a silver key that's got like a thumb drive on the end. And then there's pictures that they sent out to like Matt Colville, Nate from WSAD20 got one. I think Matt Mercer got one. And they have an image on them that is like, I don't know, some part of the puzzle that is happening with Stream of Many Eyes. So something to keep an eye out for. Digging into this now to kind of see what's going on. But yeah, it seems like interesting stuff. So
yeah, we'll have to ask Nate. That would be the one person.
Yeah,
to
well,
figure
he,
out we
he posted.
Ask.
He got a letter from Elminster, nice. And he got a letter from Elminster and a bunch of and then it's got this like picture, and I think it's just like a missing piece of a puzzle, and we the community of D&D are supposed to take all these different pictures and figure out the puzzle from there. So it's kind of neat, kind of really, really neat.
Yeah, there's Matt Mercer. The link is in the chat if you want to see Matt Mercer's tweet.
There you
on
go.
His. No stone unturned. Seeing the hashtag no stone unturned. I have been seeing that. I just didn't know what it was all completely about.
So hashtag no stone unturned and figure that out. I think next week I'm going to dig into this as much as possible. And so maybe next week for the Saturday morning D&D show, I'll have some more information on it. And then, yeah, I was in Thailand. What else can I say? Other than that, the Numenera game that I play, the finale is this Monday. And I think we're all going to dress up. I'm going to like, my character has a robotic arm, so I'm going to like tinfoil my arm, and that should be really fun. But yeah, you should definitely come out for the finale of Numenera Fury. It's going to be lots of fun on the Saver Dice channel.
So what happens after that to your schedule?
I have Mondays open unless we want to continue doing something else. But yeah, I'll have Mondays free. So I don't know. Gosh, I want to play D&D so bad. We got to like plan something.
Yeah. All right, cool.
But
yeah, so that's been a lot of good D&D. It's super cool that you had a great vacation. We're super happy you're back.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back.
All the Gen Con event stuff has been open, so we started signing up for that stuff. We know there's a lot of YouTube people going and streamers going. They're going to do some meetups and stuff, and there's Critical Role said they're even going to have a booth at Gen Con this year. They're actually going to have a place where you can buy their merchandise and stuff. So they're going to be on the main floor. Plus they'll be doing a live show. Lots of other shows that you know of like to do live shows at that place, or podcasts do live shows. It's a real good, cool meetup. So that's Graybeard's going, I'm going, we're trying to get quite a few people from the show are going. So it's been fun.
I should look at
our
the tickets
week in D&D.
And yeah. So should I should buy a Gen Con ticket now and then figure out hotels and stuff later, but I should probably get one.
Well, you've got floor space. Yeah. You want to always do hotel if you're going to do your own early, because they fill up super quick, because that town, Indianapolis, is almost too small for the number of people that descend on Gen Con.
Gotcha.
Like they just don't have enough hotels to handle all the people that go. But there's plenty of room in mine and Graybeard's room that if anybody wants to crash and save some money, they certainly
I wouldn't
come
open
in
that
crash
up to everybody, but
true.
You're gonna get like
true, like a million people.
Half the chat. another quarter of the YouTube video subscribers are going to be like, what? My dog is behind me with the loudest feet in the world. But
yeah.
Sweet. Cool. Well, this might be a shorter show unless you have something else you want to talk about.
Well, I think that was about it. We didn't have a lot of rules or any other stuff that come up. You know, it wasn't a lot of Adventure League. We went down to our game store to ask about Adventure League, and they're only really playing it on one night. I really wish my game store played it more than one night, because I think then it would be easier for me to schedule me to go down and become an Adventure League GM.
Yeah,
but
I'm thinking about doing the same thing. Oh, I did want to talk about my bard is level 3, almost level 4, and in Adventure League rules, you can use your downtime days to bump yourself from 4 to 5, and from I think 9 to 10 and 15 to 16, like these different tiers, you can kind of bump yourself into the like tier 2 play, which starts at level 5. So I'm really excited because my bard is basically going to be level 5 here in a couple weeks, and I guess at my Adventure League store, kind of what people do is they have if you get a tier 2 character, then you will build a tier 1 character in case there's no tier 2 games happening. So right before I left for Thailand, I was like thinking about, oh, what should I build? What should I build? And so I'm losing my voice because I'm jet lagged and tired. But I built a transmuter dwarven wizard. And so I have this really cool idea of like a wizard that uses like mold stone and things like that. Like a lot of these weird cantrips, and kind of make like a themed wizard out of it. So I think that might be my next Adventure League character.
Nice.
And play him kind of on the side. But I really like the idea of having this like dwarven wizard. Like it just seems really fun. And my stats are not the best because wizards need intelligence and the dwarf does not give you intelligence at all. So I think I have like a 14 in intelligence, where the average would be like a 16 when you're doing kind of the standard point buy and stuff like that. But we'll see. He could be really fun. So I've got a lot of hit points. I think I had a 16 in con. So...
Yeah, we did just discuss that really cool mechanic of being able at before you get to fifth level, you can change anything about your character that you're playing except the name. Like everything else can be changed. So I could have gone through this whole Tomb of Annihilation as my human barbarian variant. And then all of a sudden, because I just hit 4 and I'm already halfway through 4. Mm-hmm. So I need to make this decision too on mine before we get too far. And I could be like, I think I'm going to be a tiefling wizard.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like, you could change anything. Like, yeah.
How does that work in the fiction? But for Adventure League, it's harder to think about it that way. I think Adventure League is more about testing things out, playing things, and allowing people to drop in and drop out more than it is your cohesive story of your Dragonborn Paladin that's gone from this to this. You know, it's a little bit different than that. So we did have a big long discussion about what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it. And for me, it's a really good rule because I am such a character building, I want to say the wrong word, but it's like, I do it so much and I never stop. I've got character after character idea that I'm like, oh, I'm going to build this and I'm going to build this. And I roll this up and then I roll that up. And I was like, so for me, anytime I can change my characters around, I love that idea.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to try this. And I think that was the idea with Adventure League too. Like you try this new mechanic and you're like, you know what? This spell and I did it with my bard. Like I chose 2 weapon fighting for my College of Swords bard. And I did a day of like 2 weapons fighting. And I'm like, you know what? Like I'm just not feeling this as much as I really liked the rapier. And I like having my bonus action available to hand out bardic inspiration rather than using my bonus action as an attack. So I switched to the you get an extra +2 damage with if you're using a one-handed weapon and nothing in your other hand. And so I switched to that to get extra damage. And then I have my bonus action free. This is my bonus action hand, which is why I wave it around. But I have my bonus action free to do bardic inspiration to my party and stuff. And that worked out really well. So I love that I was able to change that kind of on the fly and figure out how I like to play my bard before I reach level 5, which is cool.
Yeah. And I've liked playing my barbarian, but I definitely have this urge to say, oh, maybe I could play a Hexblade Warlocker. Because at 4th, you can really build your character so it feels like your character. Because sometimes you have a concept that it doesn't feel like that concept until you hit fourth or fifth level, mm-hmm. right? Because you don't get the abilities you need to say, like when you remember you did your Iron Man build,
yeah.
like if you're doing that first level and second level, you don't feel like Iron Man yet, right?
Because
have the things that make you feel like that. But if you say, Jordan, go ahead, we're going to play a campaign and you can build a seventh level character, you can get pretty close to that feel now all of a sudden, and you can start doing that. So when you hit that fourth, you get this idea of, okay, I like my character, but now this is what I could do if I built, like you said, the divination wizard, or the I want to play the Hexblade Warlock, or even the multi-class, because by fourth you can do a 3-1 split, right? Mm-hmm. And that can give you like my thief shadow sorcerer, which is a really cool concept, but I couldn't do it until I was fourth, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
My brain just goes explodes when I hit fourth or fifth level on, oh, what could I do if I change everything? So it's a super cool mechanic. And for me, who likes to change things, I realize there's lots of players out there that they make the character and they fall in love with that character and they would never even think about changing their character because they like, I'm sure Laura's never going to change Jester. Jester's a perfect character. You don't get to fifth level and think, I don't want to play Jester anymore. You know, that's just such a good character. You want to play that one. But for me, I like switching around a lot.
It's true. Well, geez, this was really fun. Thank you guys so much for coming out and watching the Saturday Morning D&D Show. I'm excited to be back, and we will be back next week with another episode and hopefully more. I'll have more D&D to talk about. And keep an eye on Twitter because maybe we'll post a game tomorrow that we'll stream live. That could be really fun here on Sir Lucian's channel or maybe my channel. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We'll make it work.
But I really want to play some D&D, so yeah. So thank you guys again so much for coming out, and we will see you next week? Yeah?
Maybe, yeah.
No, we'll be here next week. We'll see you guys later. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Woo! Our intro and outro music is 8-Bit March by Twin Musicom, licensed under Creative Commons. Check out their website at www.twinmusicom.org.